This will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, can you drink? A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Back to our weekly routine now, guys, and it's been quite a lot of news over the course of 1 week, and lots of like positives coming out of camp, a few negative bits and pieces, and even some NFL UK news as well. How exciting! Si, how's it going on your side, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Andy. You mentioned about lots of positives coming out this week. Even Omar Kelly has been really positive on Twitter this week. So they must be doing something right on the field.
That was it, yeah. And you know, you kind of get those ironic takes around him, don't you? Which I do feel bad for him, because he likes to, like, you know, say that he says it as it is. But yeah, he's just a bit of a he makes a mockery of himself sometimes, doesn't he? So it's very fair to go a little dig at him. Lee, how's it going, mate? You all right?
Yeah, doing well. Omar likes to play into it as well. I think he enjoys the, baiting people into... He knows the response he's going to get, and then people still fall for it every time. But I must say, I did find myself earlier in the week, after a couple of his positive comments, thinking, if he's being positive and he's usually down on the team, then it must be better than what he's given us already. So...
I had your voice in the back of my head all week, Lee, going, if the offense good, then the defense must be bad. So I was like, don't get excited. So. but yeah, it was all good to see, though, this early on, isn't it? Right, like, good that it's all clicking, and there's lots of, like, you know, social media clips of Tua hitting everyone nice and on time and stuff, which more than can be said for the likes of, like, Jalen Hurts and stuff, which I've seen a few bad takes of what he's doing up there in Philly. So yeah. Good to see. We'll kick off then. We've got like a few news bits, then we're going to dive into some positional breakdowns ahead of the season, kind of what we're looking for in that respect. But yeah, we got, like, before we recorded, we got some NFL UK news, which is few and far between these days, about the tickets for the game later this year. Obviously, the Dolphins playing the Jags in London. If you haven't seen, then if you've got a Wembley season ticket as it is, then the tickets will go on sale to you at 10 a.m. on the 18th of August, and then go on general sale at 10 a.m. on the 25th of August. Now, a lot of people kind of upset, as they always are, because this really kind of, the messaging from the NFL UK guys really seems to imply that if you've got a Wembley season ticket, then you won't be getting the chance to kind of buy a Spurs season ticket, which is frustrating, and like, I can understand a lot of people like myself in a situation where that loyalty hasn't been rewarded with a kind of chance to do that. But anyway, that's a bit of an update. Hopefully the Wembley game gets onto general sale. I know there's a lot of Dolphins fans out there. But sorry, I don't think there's an update so much from the fan club yet, but you know, it will be coming in the next few days, weeks, sort of thing.
Yeah, we've been in touch with the relevant parties to discuss our own allocation of tickets for the Dolphins game. And whilst we don't have anything significant news to share with members right now, we're hoping that on the back of the announcement today, the ball can start moving a little bit and we can start getting positive news out to members in the coming weeks.
Nice, sounds good. But yeah, just like, keep your eyes peeled for that. And it seems to be that the US and the UK are kind of moving towards having some sort of travel corridor in the next few weeks, and maybe like September time anyway. So maybe that kind of opens up a bit more travel, a bit more positivity for all of us that want to go out to watch a Dolphins game in the States as well, which is... fingers crossed for that, Consai.
Yeah, just one further note on that NFL UK email. It did mention that they are planning for full capacities at both games this season, subject to government restrictions remaining in place as they are, but did put a caveat to suggest that if there were any significant developments which meant a reduced capacity, they would have to start cancelling tickets. And you can just imagine the uproar if that starts happening. So let's keep us fingers crossed we don't get that to that point.
Yeah, for sure. And also, top tip is avoid the NFL UK Facebook group. It's like a cesspit at the like best of times. And after ticket news, it just becomes unbearable, doesn't it? So leave that group, guys. Follow stuff on Twitter. It's a lot easier. There's my top tip. Right, positive stuff. Albert Wilson, Robert Foster, you've mentioned Omar and co already, but by all accounts, Albert Wilson's having a camp for the ages and he's like the lock to be the kind of on the roster. Lee, we talked a bit about Albert Wilson and the other receivers last week and stuff. I mean, is this what you expected to be seeing, or is it kind of, it's, you know, surpassing what you expected?
I mean, maybe the deep shots are a bit more than I expected. I never really saw him as a deep threat receiver. It's more yards after the catch with Albert Wilson would be my first thought. But this is exactly where we expected to be beginning of last season before he opted out. It's not a surprise to me, and I don't want to get on my soapbox again in disbelief at how people have written him off. But I think if you're surprised, you know, it's kind of that's on you a little bit, because he's being the player that he's shown us he can be. Now, obviously, the key with him is the same as the rest of the wide receiver room, is just whether he can stay healthy. Because when he's played, he's been good.
Yeah, that's it. I can't remember how many games he played in that in the season where he was effectively our wide receiver one, wasn't he? But was that the 2019 season? But yeah, when he played, he was fantastic. And then when he wasn't on the field, it was it was a very one-dimensional offense. But Si, yeah, you've got Robert Foster kind of coming through. And that's a guy that you've mentioned in the past. Obviously got that 1 year of Alabama experience with Tua. Lots of kind of positive stuff being said about him. Do you expect him to be on the roster given that, or is it still very much a hit and miss?
I think it's still very much in the air, to be fair. This is only a week of training camp, so you'd expect, without pads, you'd expect them to at least get involved and start to catch a few balls. But they haven't played any games yet, and they haven't had any pads in practice yet. So it's very early days. I mean, he's always, no matter what he does, I feel, he's always going to be behind the majority of the likes of Parker, Waddle, Fuller, Wilson, Williams. He's always going to be on the edge or on the bubble of that position group. So I think if he's going to make the roster, it's going to be a combination of two things. It's going to be his special teams play, and he's going to need to impress in the preseason games as well, I feel, and if he's going to make that roster. But at least he's had a good start.
I think that probably goes for a lot of players across the roster. From the guys who are on the outside looking in, you don't have to perform well. You have to be spectacular. And you have to make yourself completely uncuttable. Whereas I think, you know, for all the games he's missed and everything, Preston Williams' tape is there as a Dolphin. And I think that just gives him that. He only has to come back and prove that he's healthy, and he probably makes a roster, whereas Robert Foster actually has to beat him to get there, which is a really tough spot. But then again, that's what training camp and the preseason is all about.
I mean, I think we said last week, there's always one player that stands out in camp, and this season it happens to be Albert Wilson. And if he can't do much more than what he's doing, so if he's not going to make the roster now, then he never was going to make the roster, because he's had such an impact in training camp today. I think that certainly worked in his favour a lot, bearing in mind that a year ago, or less than that even, we were all talking about him being cuttable or being on the bubble, and he certainly put himself in a very favourable position now to make that 53, which in turn puts a lot more pressure on the likes of Grant, who has been relatively quiet. I know he's caught a few deep ones from Tua, but generally speaking, he's been quite quiet. And also Williams, and also Foster, of course, the aforementioned Foster. So I think there's a lot to play for still.
So here's one for both of you. Can Albert Wilson make himself tradable? Can he make himself now such an asset that you actually want to try and move him? I still wouldn't do it. I still think he's a perfect receiver for this team. But just a thought that crossed my mind.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, it's almost like baseball, isn't it? Where if you've got like that excess player who's playing very well, they're kind of, you trade them while they're hot, don't you? So it's that sort of thing there. But that being said, I think I agree with you, mate, in the fact that Wilson just fits so well. It seems, I was going to mention it to you, actually. I was going to say that it feels to me like we're building like a team of like track athletes, and it's just you know, we're going to keep hitting them where it hurts. And if you know, Waddle's gone down the field, out of breath, trots off, Wilson comes on, the defense doesn't get any let up, and that's what we, you know, that's what we've got there. So it feels to me like you definitely won't be trading him. But what we'll say very quickly with Robert Foster is that they signed him on the first day of free agency, didn't they? So they obviously had, like, you know, tunnel vision. They were going to go and get Robert Foster. I know it wasn't expensive or anything like that, and that doesn't mean you can't be cut if you do that. But it feels to me like there's a part for him to play here. They've got that mapped out, maybe. You know, it's going to be nice cheap asset to maybe stick on the practice squad and bring up and that sort of thing. But yeah, for me, like, if you look against the likes of Isaiah Ford and that kind of thing, he's like head and shoulders above that, based on the kind of just the way the team kind of moved to pick him up, really. And you do wonder whether that Tua connection is the sort of, you know, going to work in his favour as well at the end of it. But yes, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to not let you answer that last one from Lee, but what do you reckon on that front?
Well, in terms of Wilson,
yeah,
or Foster? No, Wilson, he's putting himself in such a good position now. And I know Lee mentioned about, is he putting himself in a tradable position, but he's built such a rapport with Tua in such a short space of time, and he could be a big asset. Why would you even think about trading him? It's almost like you've got an extra weapon. Why is it even a question that you would want to trade him? Because you're giving with one hand and taking away the other, almost like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face sort of thing. So I agree. I don't think, I'd love to see him make the roster, and I'm sure he will now, but yeah, I wouldn't want to see him traded.
I think it's really important that you let your quarterback tell you the receivers he wants in his play. You know, it's not a personality thing, but he's obviously finding Wilson, whether it's intentional, whether he's just the guy that's open, that's obviously an organic thing that's happening. And I think you've got to let that dictate some of the players that are on the roster. Now and again, you're going to say this guy is just way more talented than this guy. But sometimes, you know, when stuff just happens, you just got to go with it. Do you know what I mean? We thought that Wilson was the perfect fit, and it's playing out that way. It could obviously have gone the other way. It could have been Robert Foster showed more, or all of a sudden Jakeem Grant was that guy. But, you know, I think sometimes let the quarterback tell you who the guys are.
Yeah, exactly. And we have seen, like, flashes from Waddle as well, which we should say. It feels like I should be very excited about Waddle, but I'm just kind of like, I know that he can do it, so it's going to take a little extra to kind of surprise me, if you see what I mean. I know he's very good. So, but we saw that clip, didn't we, of him creating like a ton of separation and that kind of pre-snap motion to kind of get him open. So I just think there's going to be so much of that. It's going to be very much like a college playbook of, like, exciting bits and pieces, moving stuff behind the line, just to kind of get Waddle in position. And once he's kind of, you know, into that secondary, he's going to be deadly if Tua can find him. So, yeah, that's a big thing. Go on, Si.
Just one question to slightly deviate from the topic, but you know, you mentioned Tua there, Andy. They all seem to be gelling as a unit and doing incredibly well for that first week. I'm assuming that continues into pre-season and the regular season, as we all hope it would be. Where is Tua going to fail? Just very quickly, I don't want to spend too long on this, but what is going to stop Tua being successful, bearing in mind the progress that he and the unit have made today?
I got the answer straight away, and that is the offensive line. Like, they have got to keep him upright, haven't they? Obviously, I think one of the only places that we kind of split in terms of our how we think of the team is, I think the offensive line is still one of the worst in the league in terms of what we've seen in, like, recent times. Obviously, they're a very new bunch and stuff, but I need them to keep him upright. Like, it's that pressure, isn't it? It's the same thing we were saying, like, last year. It was kind of, you know, getting blown up, and he only got, like, 1 or 2 seconds to get it out. If we can get a bit more time with him to keep the ball in his hand and let that deep ball develop, that's where he's going to excel. But we very much could end up in dink and dunk very quickly if the offensive line is collapsing and he's having to, you know, 3-yard slant to whoever's there, Wilson, Waddle, whatever, and then you kind of start asking Parker to kind of catch, you know, the short routes, the kind of contested catches, because he hasn't had time to get any separation, and that's when you start to see the turnovers and the confidence dives, and that's the route for me. Lee, I don't know about you, mate.
I think it's I think you see they've made a bad call with the offense, with the dual offensive coordinators, and it becomes a mess. I think Tua has already shown in college that he's got the mental ability to play the game fast. I think to slightly overcome the O-line problem is why you build with so much speed. And why you, exactly like you said, why you try and get players open before the snap. So I think Tua reads the game quick enough to make those throws and get himself out of some trouble. But I completely agree with Andy. The O-line needs work. I just think it made a massive step forward last year, but it is still in the bottom third of the league. But, you know, easily, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that it's that or injury for me. And I'm not saying that he's injury prone, but again, it probably plays into the O-line thing. You take too many hits, they pile up, and that's on anybody, not just Tua.
Yeah, that's a good question, though, Si, to be fair, because, you know, all the excitement and stuff, you just need to kind of taper it a bit, don't you, with some caveats, obviously, when we go up against the Patriots defense or whatever, that Belichick scheme and the Bills and everything with their very good lockdown corners, then, yeah, it immediately becomes a lot more difficult. And I'll be interested to see if we put the starters out against the Bears in, I think, as our first preseason, a week on Saturday, and like Khalil Mack and co. Be good to see how we stand up against that early doors. Moving on slightly then, and we've got on a negative note here, we've got some players going onto the COVID list. That's after George Godsey, who's obviously co-offensive coordinator and tight ends coach, has tested positive for the virus. That means Mike Gesicki, Keith Carter, and Adam Shaheen on the COVID list as well. Their vaccine status determines how long they have to quarantine, and they can only return once they're medically cleared, obviously. So few guys being lost to that. We know Shaheen's stance. If you don't see Adam Shaheen's Twitter, it's a thing of beauty, I think. maybe not. But go and like check that out if you want to know what your stance is. We've decided before the show we're not going to get into the kind of political nature of the vaccine, but very real problem still, Si, isn't it? This COVID list. And if this is a game week, we're down to Hunter Long and Durham Smythe to lead the tight end group. Obviously, if it's a game week as well, you expect those guys are probably going to be in the same room. So you're down to even less than that. So, yeah, obviously going to have a big impact throughout the season still, do you reckon?
Yeah, what's the protocols for players who have had the vaccine? Is there a difference between one or two jabs? And if so, how long do they have to serve? I wasn't aware of what the timescales are for that.
Not sure on one or two jabs, but and I'm not sure on the exact timescales either, but you can definitely come back a lot quicker if you've been vaccinated.
You have to complete two negative tests within 24 hours apart. So essentially, you could be out 48 hours. If you return two negative tests and you're fully vaccinated, you're eligible to be back on with the team.
Okay, it's interesting. Thanks for that. One of the most significant things that I picked up from those three tight ends going on the COVID list was who was not on the COVID list, and that was Durham Smythe. And I was trying to think about, oh, okay, well, why is he not on the list and the other three are? And I wondered if that meant he was training with the twos.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Which speaks volumes in terms of where he might sit on the depth chart as it currently stands right now. Obviously, a lot can change, but that was the most significant thing I got from those three guys being on the COVID list.
Yeah, nice one. That's a good take, actually. I hadn't actually thought of it like that, but that's, very good point. And to flip that back, do we think that the other guys being on the COVID list, if they haven't been vaccinated and they've got to, you know, isolated for I don't know whether it's a full 8-day sort of period as if it is over here, but if they say it was, does that give Smythe a bit more practice time and a better chance of beating out someone like Adam Shaheen?
Yeah, who is not going to have the vaccine, as we're not going to touch on further, but it does give him a chance. But then you could say that for any position group, any sort of player who seems to sit further down the depth chart, as we've seen with the wide receivers, with numerous Fuller, Parker, until recently, and Williams all missing a significant time of practice, it's given other opportunities for different players to make an impression. So the situation is the same as it would be if there were injuries. It does give them, does present that opportunity, and obviously it's up to them whether they take it or not, but it's just another way somebody down on the depth chart can potentially make a name for themselves and get on the roster.
Yeah, that's it. And interestingly, across the NFL at the moment, I know that they've hit 90% vaccinated rate now. I think the Vikings are the lowest vaccinated team in the league. I saw something like 55 to 60% of them are in the process of or had both vaccinations. So that's, you know, we're not going to go into it, but that's ridiculous on the Vikings' behalf. And just sort that out, don't they, before things really catch up over there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't want to go into whether it's right or wrong to get it, but I do think, you know, now Shaheen's missed time, it will play in, it will be a factor that the coaching staff and the front office take into account when it comes to who makes this roster. If Darren Smythe does well now and gets that extra time, he can play himself into a position where they say, that's an added risk we've got with one player that we don't have with the other, perhaps. Maybe Darren Smythe isn't based there. I don't know. But, you know, it certainly could be a factor that, you know, that plays into players making or not making a roster. So,
yeah, they've specifically said that you can't cut a player for the vaccine, haven't they? But, I mean, you know, like, you're not going to cut someone like DeAndre Hopkins because he doesn't want to take it. But when Adam Shaheen goes, you can definitely say it's for footballing reasons.
There's very few players that don't fall into the, I can make a very good argument that it's performance related, you know, compared to another player. So, you know, yeah, you're right. And you shouldn't be able to, you know, definitely you shouldn't be able to discriminate that way. But let's be honest, people are people and it's, you know.
Yeah, go on, Si.
Again, not to elaborate too much on the whole vaccine thing, but I just wonder if this is still bubbling around come mid-October when the Dolphins come over, and given the UK's current status, I just wonder if there will be certain players who are not allowed to make the trip, given the fact that they would not be able to comply with government regulations. I mean, you might know more, Andy, on that, but I just wonder if, or will they give exemptions? Being a professional athlete, given that we've just had the Euros in this country as well. And I'm sure not all of those players who came over to play at Wembley or Hampden were fully vaccinated. So I just wonder what the stance will be on an NFL roster in that respect.
Yeah, I'd imagine it would definitely be kind of the professional sports level for those guys. But then if you think about it, all the coaching staff, everything that comes with it, you can't see the kind of backroom staff, you know, obviously the coaches maybe, but then all the kind of logistical element of it, that, you know, if those guys haven't got vaccines, then that's the kind of guys aren't going to get like the pass to kind of not isolate when they arrive and stuff like that. And so then it becomes a bit more of a logistical issue as well, doesn't it, really? So the team got to work around that. And you wouldn't want to see, like, I don't know, a kit manager something getting let go because they can't make a travel like that. So obviously the team must be working through all these eventualities, but it's going to be such a kind of factor this season, isn't it? Again, until, you know, I don't want to say it until it goes away, because it doesn't look like it's ever going to go away in full, but yeah, going to make it interesting, and you're going to see that the better run organizations are going to thrive in this element. Well, not thrive, but they're going to have, you know, plans for it. Whereas the poor run organizations, i.e. the Vikings, you know, if it all comes unraveled, they're going to be in the situation like the Broncos were last year, when they're putting out someone random to play quarterback and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, very interesting to see that kind of outside impact. And imagine if you were doing off a sports degree at this time, it'd be fascinating to kind of combine the two and look into that in a lot of detail and take into account the science and all that sort of stuff. But
you could do a podcast on it, even.
We could do. I'm not going to do it, but you could do. last bit of camp news then. Obviously, last week we touched on X a lot and the kind of, he turned up to camp, and then as soon as we released this, he obviously released a statement saying he wanted a trade and that sort of business. But a week is a long time, Lee. Do you want to talk us through where we appear to be now and what the state?
So, I mean, we said last week turning up was the first hurdle and practicing was a whole different thing, and that's exactly how it's turned out. And the same thing that if he wasn't happy 6 months ago, he wasn't going to be happy now, because nothing had changed. And then, like you say, after we released the podcast, which is, anyone that's ever made a podcast knows this happens all the time, he then releases something that you would obviously have taken into account when talking about it. I thought there was some interesting things in there. in the statement, start, you know, kind of going back to the earliest point and starting with his statement, he mentioned that he didn't understand the contract he was given. I think when he said that, I don't think he means he didn't understand the contract itself. I think he didn't understand why they were making him the highest paid player at that time is what he meant. I'm guessing no. And if you didn't understand it, I really don't care because you signed it, so it's your problem. Yeah. Sorry. No, we've all signed things and not read it all the way through. Let's be honest. Like that, I don't blame him for that. But if it then gets brought up that something's in there that you don't like, sorry, it's kind of on you. You signed it to say you read and understood it. That's on you. So I don't really care from that point of view. You fired your agent, which is fine. You know, if you're passing the blame that way, that's, you know, he's within his rights to do that. I've said that I don't blame him for asking for money and coming back to the table and asking the Dolphins, and I don't blame him for saying no either. You know, it's a tough situation, but it was very telling that he said he doesn't want to get fined. And that puts that changes the situation massively for me, because I think the Dolphins are in a position where if they decide not to pay him, and he's come out and said it since, he's going to play.
Do you think? You think he's going to have this injury that's going to
maybe?
Yeah,
maybe he does. But you know, I would say at the moment part of the injury is they're not putting him out there.
I think, yeah, I mean, it feels a lot like the Jalen Ramsey thing with the Jags, where he had an injury and it mysteriously healed when the Rams turned up to pay him £15-20 million a year.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's in the Dolphins' best interest for him not to be out there either. It that's a two-way street. You know, if he was to go out there and actually get hurt, he also becomes untradeable as well. Yeah. You know, especially if it's a long-term injury, and we've seen a lot, especially in the last 2 days, of players getting hurt and missing substantial time. So I think that's a real two-way street, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's as much as the team saying, look, till this is resolved, do your fitness and stay out of harm's way. I'm still a proponent of getting this resolved.
Well, it seems that we're moving in a direction where X prefers to stay, and a lot of people have like quoted that in the last couple of days. Si, what do you reckon? I mean, yep. Is that, obviously it's good news if true, but like, should we take it at face value or?
Yeah, I think you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, because he can't really say anything different. Imagine if he'd have turned around and said he doesn't want to stay. Well, he's effectively said he doesn't want to stay because of the trade off request, but now he's backtracked on that simply due to the fact that I wonder if he realizes he's not going to be traded, and therefore he has to save a bit of face with the fans for a start. Otherwise, they would potentially get on his back a lot. As it happens, they didn't, from what we read in training camp. It was certainly the other way around. But I just wonder if he said that for those reasons. Reading between the lines with regards to his statement, I just wonder if he said he didn't understand the contract, and that was a dig at his former agent who has effectively put them in this position that they're finding now. I wonder.
I think also, to go along with it, is the front office need applauding for paying someone before they got to this level. This is good business. And if they do stand firm and he plays, it's even better business, because you managed to pay a guy early and now you've got him on what seems like a cheap deal for where he performs at. Not cheap, that's the wrong word. A reasonable deal for how he performs, then it's actually, you know, tremendous business. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Simon, but I just think it plays into it.
No, that's fine. The other thing I was going to mention as well is that Brian Flores seems to have come out today, or it might have been overnight our time, in that they seem to be making a little bit of progress towards resolving it as well, which they've not said before. They've rarely commented on the situation other than acknowledging its existence. But today, reading that they've actually made a bit of progress, so maybe there is some light coming at the end of the tunnel. And having said that, he's going to be traded tonight after we release the podcast. You know it now, don't you?
Of course. I think the other thing is, the really telling thing is, all the way through this, Brian Flores has been very much, we love Xavier and Howard. We've not seen that with other players in the past, that they've wanted to move on or have wanted to move on. I really dislike the comparison of this to the Minka Fitzpatrick thing. This is a very, very different situation. You were trading potential, whereas here we're talking about a player that's actually performed in the league and done those things. Yes, Minka is fulfilling that potential, but there was no guarantee that was the case. And there's no guarantee he would have done that in Miami. So this isn't a direct comparison to that. But I think it's very interesting that Flores has been kind of very, we want to keep him. He's a great player. We want him on the do you know what I mean? I think it's all been very positive. I think if the coach wants it, I think eventually they find a way to get something done. I think they'll have to do something to so everybody kind of saves face a little bit. But I think there is somewhere there where that can happen.
And I think it's important now from a playing perspective they get something done because of the way the secondary are being beaten in training camp. Is that partly because Xavier Howard is not on the field, and does that translate to games?
Yeah, exactly. We do not want to be in that position week one, do we? But yeah, it's all very interesting. I wonder if it will be resolved very quickly. I also find it interesting that Byron Jones is comments as well, kind of. He'd obviously been very much PR briefed to kind of say, oh, I understand where X is coming from. You know, he could have kind of just said, look, we're here to play football. But he was kind of, you know, quite tactful with it. So I do wonder if Samik is inching down the line. Go on.
I also thought it was very telling that they put Xavier Howard in front of the media. Mm-hmm. That's an unusual thing for them to do, you know, in the sort of heat of what's going on. They could easily have stashed him away, especially as he's hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was surprised. I felt that was a kind of indication that, again, things are moving, even if it doesn't end up getting resolved, that at the moment they believe, you know, fences can be mended.
Yeah. So, like, guns ahead, do you think it gets done then, Lee? Like, yes or no?
Yeah. Done.
Sorry?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think I agree as well. It's weird, isn't it? Because a week ago I was just like, right, off he goes, Dallas, give us your money, and I was happy.
I think my biggest problem has been, like, especially so a little peek behind the curtain and how much of a nerd I am. I woke up late in the night and saw that come through about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then spent the next 2 hours trying to figure out what it could possibly do to keep Xavier Howard, or what would be fair trade value for him. And I don't know how you replace 10 interceptions is the starting point. And I don't know what you receive back that would feel, okay, I'm willing to give up those 10 interceptions because I feel like I'm getting as much here. I don't know what that is. Just out of interest, if you guys got something, what would it take to get that deal done if you were the GM?
Yeah, my thoughts on that are, why is it taking you 2 hours to think of compensation, Lee? That's a significant length of time to be worrying about trade compensation in the middle of the night.
I know, right? But the problem is, I can't think of anything where the Dolphins would get where I'd think, yeah, I'm okay losing those 10 interceptions because they're not on the team. Like, we don't have someone ready to step in and give us. Let's cut it in half and let's say 5 or 6 interceptions. Do we think Noah's going to give him, or Nick Needham's going to give that in the starting role for the first time?
For me, it's all kind of where do the Dolphins think they are in the process, isn't it? Really, because you could go out and you're not going to get like a Pat Surtain or anything like that, but you could go out and get one of the corners that's been drafted in the last couple of years in the first 2 or 3 rounds that hasn't fully done anything yet. The one of the Raiders guys, somebody like that, you get that plus a pick. You think, I'm good at working the secondary out, I'm going to go and get a project. That's where you go and get someone if you think this isn't the season where we're going to go and win it all. If you think this is the season we're going to go and win it all, you go and get whatever kind of star asset you can get in return, but you're in the weak point because you know that you want to be trading, that the other team know that you want to be trading, and they can kind of play hardball. So, yeah, there's not. I know where you're coming from, Lee. I think you're in the point where you can't, like, the Dolphins aren't going to win, like, you know, going to struggle to win a trade in this point. But I also think that, I think I've said it last week, but I also think if it's becoming a locker room problem, you take what you get and you get rid. That's the only Yeah, if they briefed that out to the media and said this is becoming a bit of a locker room cancer, just get what you can and move on, sort of.
Completely agree.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to raise, actually, in terms of is it so not so much about the level of compensation that you can get for Xavier Howe, but more about avoiding a big distraction and a big issue in the locker room, which is more important. Is it six of one and half a dozen of the other? Where does your money lie? So I think they've got that to consider as well, for sure.
Yeah. At the moment, it seems very much like the players are kind of understanding. Not necessarily in support either way, but understanding, even Byron Jones, who kind of inadvertently is the kind of root of the problem, or is at least named as part of the problem. You know, it's
yeah, exactly. And it was cool with being named, I think, wasn't he? I you imagine that ex or his agent definitely checked in to kind of make sure it was cool with that.
I believe he was asked the same questions when he actually signed the deal in the first place, because it made him higher paid than ex. And he seems to have a fairly smart business. To be honest, as far as I see it, you negotiate your own deal. It's not like in many workplaces where you say, well, we do the same job, so we should earn the same money. Sports doesn't work like that. You negotiate your deal, and that's you try and get as much as you can. And your agent, that's great, you know. But you know, you can't hold that against the other players at your position. That's not kind of the way it works.
Yeah, you're a big name. You would set the market, don't you? Sorry, Cycle.
I was just going to say, does that mean Byron Jones is going to be named as the other man in Xavier Howard's divorce from the Dolphins?
Possibly.
What happens if X goes and gets his money, then Byron Jones has like 5 interceptions, which would be like unbelievable for him. And we're back here again next year.
That would be a great problem to have.
It would.
Let's hope we have that problem.
Anyway, right. So I think we've got, is it 4-5 Sundays of the season? Looking at my thing. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so five Sundays to go. So we're going to start going through some of the position groups to kind of look at who's going to make the roster, what we're kind of expecting from that position group over the course of the season. We're going to start out this week with the tight ends on offense and the safeties on defense. Anyone got a preference, Si? What's your preference to start with? Either of those?
I don't mind.
Oh, mate, that's where you pick one. You've got to be decisive. Right,
tight ends then, because we've already talked about them to a certain extent. And one of the 3 points I was going to raise, we've already covered in terms of is Durham Smythe currently with the 2s. That was one of the 3 I was going to raise. Do you want me to go into the other 2 I've got down as well? So one of them was focusing on Mike Gesicki. Does he get enough balls this season coming his way to warrant a new contract next season? Because you've got a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. You've got obviously all the wide receiver group, as we've mentioned, Parker, Waddle, Fuller, Wilson, Grant, Williams, Foster. You've got the whole tight end group. So the question is, does Mike Gesicki have enough catches this season to warrant a significant contract next season?
Go on, Lee. You can. Oh, no, I'll take that one. So, yeah, I mean, I think that Gesicki is going to be a red zone threat this year and the guy that we turn to when we haven't got things moving on offense. So I think very much like last year, if you need a big player, you need a guy who's going to come down with it and kind of rally the team around him, then Gesicki's going to be that guy. But like I absolutely 100% hear what you're saying. I don't think it's going to be as frequent and often as it was last year, you know. Just remember, there was games last year, wasn't there, when Gesicki was the wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 2 was like limboed, and so it was all about getting the ball down the middle to the tight end. This year, I don't think it's going to be about that. Like we've already said today, I think it's going to be a lot of sort of short, quick, using the pace and kind of mix and matching those wide receivers to kind of, you know, get the matchup nightmares going. But with Gesicki, I think he's going to be consistently out there. Obviously, you know, he's going to be the main target in the tight end group, but I don't think he's going to get the ball, you know, as in important situations as he did last year. But I still think he's going to come up with 650, 700 yards. But then the drop off to the second tight end, I think, is going to be huge. I don't think the tight end group is going to contribute a whole lot. So he's going to absorb most of that. Whether that warrants a big extension, I mean, I haven't got sort of Kelsey numbers in front of me, but I think they're going to be quite resistant to paying him. And I think the kind of defining factor in whether they're paying or not is whether Hunter Long plays well in the last three or four games this season, because effectively they're not the same player, but they're both pass catching tight ends. They're not both in there for their blocking. So if Long can come on, if we don't qualify for the playoffs and Long's in there, you know, getting 10 targets, picking up six catches a game those last few weeks, I think that will kind of sway them and they won't pay him. But Lee, I don't know what you think, mate. Pay Gesicki or not at the end of the season, what kind of defines that for you?
How far he helps take this team. I think we know that he's going to be a big part of the offense one way or the other. I think we can't just pigeonhole him as a tight end, you know, because he's going to play that. He's going to be on the field a lot, like you said. He's really tight end wide receiver. So, you know, it has to result in wins. It's not all on Mike Gesicki, but he can't disappear for games. You know, the best tight ends in the league don't do that. They show up every game. They get their catches. And I think if he doesn't, the drop-off is significant after that, based on the fact that I haven't seen Hunter Long play yet. Now, he may be very good. I know everyone's very excited, and I know the Dolphins are certainly very excited. That's going to be something to wait to the preseason to see. But as it stands right now, he's going to dictate a long way to where this offense can go.
I wonder if he's going to be franchise tag next year, because you often see tight ends taking like 3 years until they're kind of playing at least at almost their potential. I'm thinking TJ Hockenson coming to his third year this year, had a, you know, good season last season, but not sort of huge. I'm thinking Noah Fant's the same. Gesicki himself was a bit of a, you know, it was impactful in year two. I think he was a non-factor in the first year. So would they franchise tag Gesicki next year, work out if Hunter Long's actually going to be good enough to be the next 2 or 3 years of, like, you know, lead receiving tight end, and then make a decision?
That's certainly an option. Yeah. That has to be an option. I think there's already built-in excuses in regards to, you know, it's another new offense. Well, I know it's going to share a lot of things with, you know, previous things he's done, but it is new play callers, fully healthy quarterback. I think it changes things quite a bit. So I think there's already some built-in excuses for if the play is, let's say, in the average to good range rather than good to great range. Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly. So what was the other point on tight ends, mate?
Yeah, you talked about there being a drop-off after Gesicki to the remaining tight ends, and we talked on the pod last week about who we think may or may not make the roster, so I'm not going to go into that now, but just wondered what you guys thought about the role Keith and Carter will play, because he's listed as a tight end, but do you know how many receptions he's had in his career as a tight end? Any ideas?
One.
Lee?
No, I have no idea. I'll say none.
He's had 7 receptions for 66 yards in his career as a tight end. So you've got to wonder what role he's going to have in this positional group. His forte is more on the special team side of things, I think. But they signed him on a 3-year, $7.8 million contract with only $2.7 guaranteed. But I'm struggling to see where he fits in the passing game, if I'm honest with you. I don't see what role he's going to have, particularly with several players ahead of him in terms of their pass catching ability. So I just wondered what you guys thought about where do you sit on Carter?
Go on, mate.
I think, you know, yeah, special teams obviously plays a huge part. It's wherever they can see him fulfilling some sort of kind of H-back role, if they feel that he can do something in the blocking game where once you put him out there, he's not a signal as to what we're about to do, because as we like to bang on about, they want to be as multiple as possible, and if he can play into that, then he has a role. I think with the money that they signed him for, I don't think they're going to be too worried if they cut him either. I don't think they're worried about flushing $3 million down the drain, which is ridiculous, you know, and I understand that it's an awful lot of money, but I think Carl Van Noy after a year, I don't think they're that worried about it, because I think they will genuinely go with the best guys, and it's not dictated to by contract.
Yeah, if he gets cut this year, they only lose 1.2 million in dead money, I believe. So it's not a lot at all.
Yeah, it's not enough to keep him on the roster.
Yeah, for me, I'm definitely interested to see if he can be like that sixth row lineman. To be honest, I just don't really know enough about him, and I wonder. I hope he's had the vaccine so he can come back off the list as quickly as possible, because this is all going to be eating into his like showcase time, isn't it? And you just need him kind of to play all three preseason games and as much of them as possible, really, to see what you're going to get, don't you? So yeah, sorry, League One.
No, I was just going to say, I think interestingly, I said there that I don't think they're worried about the money. I think this plays into what you were saying earlier about Robert Foster as well, with them targeting him and going out and getting him on the first day. And also the rookie whose name is completely escaping me right now, that they played a massive signing bonus to undrafted to make sure he was on the team. I think they're willing to pay money to guarantee they get a look. I don't think it makes any difference into as in whether you make the roster or not. But I think I want to secure the chance to find out if you're what I think you are. Yeah. And if not, I'm more than happy to move on. But you know, when I can't remember who was the rookie they signed. They gave him like $180,000 signing bonus.
I remember it was the O lineman, wasn't it? Which
they're not going to be worried about cutting him because they paid him $180,000. Like that's you know, I don't think it's even close to being in their thinking. But I think what they wanted to do was guarantee they had him in camp so they could see and confirm whatever it is they think they have seen.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And Si, I mean, only question I've got left for you on this sort of thing is, it's kind of building on what you were saying about Kazicki earlier. I mean, the tight end's been a big part of our offense over the last couple of years. Is it going to become, and I understand your point, Lee, that Kazicki's more of a wide receiver, but for the group as a whole, is this year going to see them kind of become a secondary receiver group and more about protecting the quarterback? Or do you think they're going to be as like, you know, just shoved in there and expected to make catches as if they were receivers as a group as a whole?
I think you're going to see more wide receivers on the field, given the personnel that they've now got and all the weapons they've got, which ultimately is going to be offset by a reduced personnel on the tight end grouping in terms of the amount of time they're appearing on the field. With the exception of Gusecki, of course, because he's a natural weapon and he certainly fits that the way the offense played. But I think for the rest of them, it's going to be all about minimal playing time and maximizing the opportunities when they get them, when they come along, which if it all goes according to plan, it'll be far and few between.
Yeah,
I think you can see some situations where you see multiple tight end groupings in the red zone, where speed becomes less of a factor and there's less field to work with. And when you want possession guys, I think you're going to see them go out there with, I'm completely, you know, guessing here, but a Parker, Williams, Gusecki, and throw in whichever other tight end you want, where they're all catch the ball at the highest point guys. They're going to contested catch guys, not the speedsters, because there's less room to operate and actually get open. Like you can do it, but you know, you can do it before the snap, but when you're, you know, in that short part of the field, there's just less room for your speed to be effective. I think they're going to play a really big role in scoring touchdowns and really destroy some people's fantasy teams.
That is a very good point. Yeah. And even when we're kind of running the ball in the red zone as well, isn't it? It's going to be I don't think they're going to faff around. They're just going to make it every. Obviously, it's a run and back their guys to move the other guys out of the way and create those lanes for Malcolm Brown to pick up 4 or 5 yards. Go on, Si.
On that note, Lee, I was reading a report from a training camp day this week where they practiced those short yarded situations in front of the end zone, and Tua threw 4 TDs. In 4 trips, 4 different scenarios, and I don't recall any of them being to tight ends. Might be wrong, I'm sure. I'm not sure. I won't be able to dig it out now. But
watching some of the video clips released, that they were throwing a lot of those. Do you remember they threw 2 of them, especially in the Arizona game, and they went through a phase where they threw a bunch of them consecutively, but then teams kind of sat on it a little bit, where Tua basically throws up and throws it at the back, stands up and throws it at the back pylon. And
yeah,
whichever receiver's there, his job is to just go get it. There was a couple of those again, especially to Parker when he actually practiced yesterday, which is turning into a bit of a unicorn sighting right now. But
yeah, exactly. Right, other side of the ball, safeties. Quite a interesting group, this, obviously. People talk about the Dolphins and say secondary is the strong point. It is what the defense is built around. But what they really mean is the cornerbacks, isn't it, really? Safety group's quite young. You've obviously got Brandon Jones, Javon Holland's the rookie. Trill Williams is currently there, who's the rookie that came over from the Saints. Nate Holly's not got a lot of experience. Clayton, here we go. Fejedulum, is that right? Do you reckon that's
it? Is. I think it is, actually. Yeah. It's a good job it's not Fejedulums.
Yes, exactly. No S. Don't make me tweet it again. and then obviously you've got Mr. Experience, which is Eric Rowe. But it's an exciting group in that Brandon Jones and Javon Holland are full of potential. We know that they can be very good on their day. We've seen it at college, particularly Holland. We know that Rowe's reliable. I still wonder if this is one of the weaker points in the defense. Si, what do you reckon?
One of the things I noted around this group was actually I'd like to see Brandon Jones make that step up from the year one to year two transition that we know rookies need to be looking for, because I think he had a solid rookie season, but he only started four games, albeit he played in all 16. So I'd like to see him making that step up now between year one and year two, because, as you say, it's a very young group and they need somebody to step into that strong safety role alongside Eric Rowe. Or actually, thinking out loud now, is he in direct competition with Javon Holland for playing time, given that they're similar players? So competition will bring out the best in players, I'm sure. But you don't want to see Brandon Jones fall behind too much, given that it's an important year for him. So that's, for me, is a big question around this positional group, is just how much Javon Holland can take away or make an impact, but to the detriment of Brandon Jones.
Yeah, and I know big friend of the show, Raj, is all in on Brandon Jones, think he's a fantastic player. I can definitely see where he's coming from, but I think Holland is much better. Holland's the starting free safety for this team for the next 3 or 4 years once he's bedded in. It might not come immediately, but that kind of range, the way he hits, the ball hawk instincts he's got, Holland's got to be the answer there for me. Jones, I think, has got to play himself into a strong safety role. I don't know, Lee, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think the absolute ideal is that they end up being a tandem. They're being a young tandem that are brought along together and know each other's games inside out to make them as effective as possible. And I still think right now the experience wins out a little bit. I think there's a reason you brought a Jason McCourty in who can play safety. It's because if things were to go not as well as you'd hoped with the young guys, you've got someone that you can trust to a degree. He's obviously not a superstar. There's a reason he was available. There's a reason he's been on so many teams. But you can trust him to be a serviceable guy back there. And I think Eric Rowe has a very specific role. And I think it's going to be very difficult to dislodge him, because you need to become better than him at that thing. I don't know how easy it is to do, because it feels like that's again something that you build with experience. So I think we're going to see a lot of interchanging throughout the season.
Yeah, go on, Si.
You mentioned Jason McCourty there, Lee. He only signed a 1 year, $1.2 million contract. Do you think that was so? It looks like he's going to be yet another 1 year wonder for their free agent signings, given the fact that he's 33 and at the back end of his career anyway. But do you see that signing purely as one to bring along the likes of Brandon Jones and Javon Holland to give them that coaching and that mentorship, with a view to those two guys being the long-term future at that position?
Yeah, the young guys are the future. you know, that's the plan. The young guys are definitely the future. But I think you bring in a McCourty to say, it's also, it's not your job. You've got to win it. You still have to earn it. Like, we're not just going to pencil you in there. It, you know, and I think Brian Flores has done that at almost every position and even did it at quarterback. Tua didn't go in, you know, straight away. Tua went in when they decided that he was ready.
Yeah.
I think that's just the way this staff operate. And I think they will always have the veteran presence. And then when the young guys become veterans, then you'll start seeing them bringing in the young guys to try and push the old guys again. It's the kind of like almost NFL circle of life.
Yeah, for me this year, what I'm really looking for from this group is to take a bit of pressure off that corner group. I think in getting like, I think back to the Chiefs game, and I think that's where, I'm going to say it again, Fajedulam started, didn't he? And he got picked on, and Mahomes went against him often and always. Yeah. And kind of that's where that kind of, you know, we had X out on the field. He made the excellent interception against Mahomes. We had Jones out there doing his thing, but we gave a hell of a lot of yards up over the middle. I remember that happened against the Raiders. I know that Jones was in coverage, but the safety kind of lost his man there, and Jones was kind of coming back in there and committed that PI, which led to the play from there. But for me, I just want a bit more reliability, and that's why I think they're going to get Holland in as quickly as they can. I think Holland's the most natural guy in that. You know, if you wanted to almost, you know, cover three, then just drop Holland in there, and he's going to like be able to, you know, sideline to sideline, pick up your guy, and then. I don't really care who's at strong safety, but I think I want to see Brandon Jones in there as quickly as possible. Eric Rowe coming in once we're playing, if we're playing, you know, tight ends that are dominating the pass game. That's really all I want to see of Rowe this year. But I do agree, Lee, that it's going to be hard to play him out of that role. Just go on, Si, sorry.
I think we're going to find out pretty early what those two are made of, because let's assume for a moment X is going to come back. Teams are going to look at that secondary and think, well, we know where the weak spot is because they've got a lot of inexperience in the middle of the field. So you can see a scenario where teams are going to target them often and early in terms of that their game plan. So I think you'll find out fairly early on just what they're made of, and that might dictate the pattern for the rest of the season.
Lee's looking like he's going to drop some kind of piece on us there, mate. Come on, don't give us that look.
No, I don't... I just don't think X being in the lineup stops teams going at him. And I think that's part of my whole compensation problem is teams still throw at him. He gets 10 picks because no one is scared to throw the ball at Xavier Howard. And he gives up yards. You know, he's not... He turns over the ball at a terrific rate, but he's not a shutdown corner either. And that's where he's such an enigma. And I think that's why he's such a hard player to deal with in this particular circumstance. But I just think it doesn't guarantee that you funnel it into the rookies.
No, but if you were an offensive coordinator, Lee, and you were looking at the Dolphins secretary and still saw Xavier Howard and Byron Jones on the outside, and then you've got Brandon Jones, who's got 1 year's experience, and Javon Holland, who's a rookie, where would you throw the ball?
I agree with you. I just people haven't been. Because I'd still have been throwing the ball at Bobby McCain. But X still had 10 picks. So it's I agree with you. I say I would be doing the same thing. Like I wouldn't want to go anywhere near Xavier and Howard, because I'd rather give up 50 yards, 60 yards that my offense would have had and keep those two picks. Do you know what I mean? Stop turning the ball over. But
yeah. I mean the point I'm just trying to make is that we'll find out pretty early what they're made of, for sure. Yeah.
And also, Brian Flores isn't going to be scared to throw him in there. If he thinks they're ready, they'll go out there. We've seen that, you know, we've seen that before.
I wonder if Holland and Cole play any special teams role as well, as much as I don't really like putting the high draft picks in there. You've got to think that this coaching staff want them to earn it, and thus Holland's like speed and his ability to kind of get the right angle on the tackle, that just... It screams to me gunner for a couple of games as well.
Yeah, don't forget you've got Nate Holly and Fajedulam, who
almost as good as me, mate, but
almost as good, but not quite. Those two guys are special teams guys, and well, let's call him Clayton, because it's easier. He was a special teams captain, don't forget, last year as well. Yeah. So if anyone's going to play special teams, maybe those two guys are going to have more of a role there. But I understand the point you're making. It's all part of the learning experience, isn't it? And to take advantage of his, of Holland's skill set.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All right. Any other points you want to make on safeties, guys, before we shift along? Nice one. Well, I think that's about it for us this week then in terms of Dolphins news. I just want to give a very quick plug to one thing on slightly different. We've got our Full 10 Yards season guide out. If you go to full10yards.com and you'll see that there. You can pre-order your hard copy now. I think it's $6.99, or a digital copy you can get today for $4.99. The Dolphin section is written by me with a fan view from Sy, so you're getting a bit of content from us guys as well. So go and check that out. Guys, do you need to plug anything this week? Are we all good? Lee, anything on your side?
No, I'm just waiting for preseason football so we can stop. So we can get some actual indication on some of these rookies and stuff, you know, stop just projecting. At least once you've got something to actually go on.
Yeah, that's it. And the first game's like very UK-friendly time as well, isn't it? I want to say it's like 6 p.m. on the Saturday.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll have to stop watching baseball because that is all I do at the moment. But that's fine. I can give it up for some Dolphins football. And on that note, we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next week and every week until the season, when we'll also be with you every week.